Hello, and welcome to the Shakti Hour, a podcast on Ram Dass's Be Here Now Network, where I speak with women about their personal experience on the spiritual path. My name is Melanie, and today I'm sharing with you a conversation I had with Ruby Warrington of thenuminous.com. Ruby is the author of Material Girl, Mystical World, The Now Age Guide to a High Vibe Life. She has co-founded a series of events called Club Soda NYC and an online spiritual mentoring program called Moon Club. If you'd like to find out more about Ruby's offerings and to purchase her book, you can find links to all of that on the Shakti Hour page at BeHereNowNetwork.com. I really enjoyed having a chance to talk with Ruby and hearing more about her personal story, her thoughts on the upcoming trends in spirituality, and the value of setting aside the conditioned mind in discovery of the authentic self. Thank you all so much for listening to the Shakti Hour. This is the end of the first year of the Shakti Hour podcast, and I'm so grateful to all of you for listening, subscribing, and giving me your feedback. I am really looking forward to the new year and have lots of interesting and insightful guests lined up already. And if you'd like to support the Shakti Hour, you can go to BeHereNowNetwork.com and make a one-time or reoccurring tax-deductible donation. And please do remember to subscribe to the Shakti Hour on iTunes and leave us a positive review if you are enjoying what you're hearing. I wish you all a very happy holidays and a blessed new year, and we'll see you again in 2018. So I'm here today with Ruby Warrington, the founder of thenuminous.com and author of Material Girl in the Mystical World. And I'm so happy to be able to have her on as a guest. I've really enjoyed reading her book and following all of the great posts and information from the website. And Ruby, so what I'd like to start with is just have you give me and our listeners a little bit of an overview of your life as a spiritual seeker, your life on the path to becoming a mystic.
Well, wow, where can I begin? I guess let's begin with that word, right? The numinous, which is, for anyone who's not hearing it clearly, numinous, which is spelled like luminous, but with an N. And I first heard that word from my first astrological mentor. I'm a lifetime student of astrology, and it's very much been my kind of a way that I really connect to the idea of myself as a spiritual being, I suppose, the practice of astrology. And Shelley von Strunkel, my first astro mentor, used that word in conversation. And also being a writer and a journalist, I immediately kind of, ooh, what's that? What does it mean? And she's in her, you know, she just used this word to describe that which is unknown or unknowable. And in relation to our human experience, for me, that word speaks to the parts of our experience that we can't necessarily articulate with words, that we don't really have the vocabulary for, that we can only sense and feel and sort of intuit and know. And so for me, my sort of spiritual path, I suppose, is really about connecting to this numinous part of human life. Like, what is this part of life that we can't really explain in terms of, you know, the human, the material experience, but that all of us know and dance with daily, you know, the spiritual side of life, the spiritual part of being a human, which is undefinable. So I suppose, the numinous becoming the name of my website, my online magazine, and very much the kind of name of my project is really about, it's about that. That's what it's been. That's what it is for me, you know, as a deeply intuitive and sensitive and empathic and very feeling person, as many of us are, I really have always felt a very strong connection to that part of life. And until I heard that word numinous, I never really had a word for it. And I didn't really know how to connect with it or have any sort of like outside validation, I suppose, that this was a part of life that was worth investigating or that bore any real relevance or importance. Whereas to me, as an individual, it always had.
Yeah.
And so my spiritual path has been really about connecting to that numinous part of myself and really giving as much importance to that part of myself as I do to the material, physical world and life that I lead, you know?
Can you remember your first connection with that part of life or your first kind of interaction with that in your young adult or childhood?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was a very, very imaginative child, as many children are, you know, and I think I was seamlessly connected to that part of life. My world was infused with fairies and spirits and, you know, the imaginary friends and imaginary games that I would play. And so I was always very, very connected to that part of my experience as a child. And then as many of us learn over the years, well, that's not really important. That's not really worth focusing on. That's not real. So, you know, but I think, yeah, just kind of memories of playing where I grew up in the UK, we lived in a county called Suffolk, which is on the East Coast, and it's very rural and really quite wild and has a deep kind of like pagan history, I suppose. And I grew up running around fields. In my earliest memories as a child, are kind of like rounding up all the little boys who lived in my street, because I was the oldest child on our street. Mm-hmm. And then following me, there were a few years behind, kind of like a whole kind of crop of boys. So I'd gather everyone in the mornings, but today we're this, today we're playing with this. And so just memories of, yeah, really creating my own reality, I suppose, based on what imaginings were coming to me that day.
Hmm. I love that, that connection to creation and creating reality and sourcing this unknown, mysterious place, and how that came together with you as a writer with a word.
Yeah,
that actually a word drew you, the word in the beginning, there was the word, and that word actually drew you in to being able to play again with that spiritual aspect of your life. That's
absolutely
really beautiful. That's really
what
beautiful.
It felt like. Yeah. Honestly, when I heard that word, it reminded me of my deep connection to that part of life. Mm. And it gave a framework for me to begin reinvestigating or reconnecting to that part of my life as an adult, and realizing that so many of the ancient spiritual philosophies, practices, which I found fascinating, but it was back in sort of 2010, 2011 that I was began to investigate this side of life again, were still quite far out of the mainstream, it felt like. And still are in many ways, and have always been in many ways. it helped me tap into the fact that so many of these practices, philosophies, are actually about reestablishing that connection or honoring that connection to the numinous part of ourselves.
Hmm. And so what practices started bringing you back in? This word was the trigger. Mm. And so what did you start to do to draw that connection back into your life?
Well, like I said, astrology has always been a real passion of mine ever since I was a child. I remember actually one of my earliest memories was, I guess I was about 3 years old, learning that I'd been, for some reason, that I'd been born in the year of the dragon. And really, even that giving me a sort of a name or a visual or a character and an archetype for the kind of the passion and the rage and the sort of like fire I sometimes felt in myself. And I remember even as a very young child, kind of like going around making dragon noises at people to express this part of myself. And so
cute.
I really, you know, having always been into astrology or been interested in it, it was around 2011 that I began studying more deeply astrology. So my astrological practice, and I think also I grew up in a completely non-religious household. Like there was no talk of any kind of religion or faith in that sort of sense. And I think actually, and I talk about this in the book, but astrology, even from a very young age, helped me to connect to the idea of something bigger than myself, like being being part of a bigger grand plan, I suppose, you know, a cosmic reality. So astrology was one and has always been there and will always been there. And I continue my astrological studies. I will always be a student of astrology. There's just so much to learn. But it was around the same time I had my first experiences with meditation. And that has been something which has grown and developed as well over the years.
And what were those experiences?
Well, my first experience of meditation was, as I write in the book, as you may have read this chapter, with the founder of Headspace, Andy Puddicombe. Headspace is a meditation app that is wildly popular and has really helped to democratize and bring meditation to the masses. And it was around the first time when he was first launching Headspace, I was working at the Sunday Times in the UK at the time, and we'd heard about this guy and thought about having him create some meditations that could live on the website, some guided meditations. So I went to visit him with a colleague, and he had us meditate just for 10 minutes in his office. And I almost had a panic attack, what felt like it. Wow. My system at the time was so jacked up on caffeine and stress and all of the city stresses that came with my very busy, hectic, deadline-oriented journalistic career. That within a few minutes of actually mindful breathing, my system just freaked out. So it was actually quite frightening. But then Shelley, the same astrological mentor, was doing some meditation sessions or classes in her home. So I went to one of those and had a different experience with it. And it was the first time I actually acknowledged that I am separate from my thoughts. And I remember she had a very distinct and sweet way of describing it, you know, after the first sort of just mindful meditation practice she guided us through, when she had asked us to, you know, be the observer of our thoughts. And afterwards she just said, well, who is observing your thoughts? And it was so simple and yet so profound. It was another real light bulb moment of like, aha,
yeah. Wow. Yeah,
there's a self, there's an I that is separate from my thoughts. So what is that self? Well, that is the numinous self, I have come to believe. So meditation has been one. Yoga is something else I now use daily as a tool. And I say use because I do see yoga as a tool versus an activity that I go and do because I do yoga. I really use it as a tool. And various other things. I suppose I stopped eating meat in 2010 and just getting, you know, conscious around that as well has been something huge. So they're quite sort of, they are quite practical, simple tools, you know. I also, one of my other projects that I launched last year is called Moon Club. And it's a sort of spiritual mentoring program for women, expressly for women. We welcome all gender expressions at our live meetups, but the online group is for women only, women and female identifying individuals. And so developing a really strong moon practice and ritualizing that in different ways has also become a way to really connect to the cycles of nature and to the cosmos as well. So that's something else.
Give me a little bit more, maybe, on your perspective from now, looking back after having created this whole world, around that moment in the Headspace office of 3 minutes of time. Like, what can you say about that now, looking back on it? Or what else can you reflect on that moment of being in that office?
You mean the physical experience I had of meditating and actually feeling very...
Because I'm actually, when you were telling that and kind of in the whole overarch of your story, I'm seeing almost like these two kind of parallel lines that were running at the same speed. And it seems like in that moment they flipped. One was on top and one was like the subline, and then they flipped. And it seems like it was that moment when it really... twisted, but maybe that's not, but it feels like a really potent moment that, you know, I'm not sure. It just seems interesting. So
I was very surprised to have had that kind of a physical reaction. And when I say it was like a panic attack, I experienced rapid raising of my heart rate, feelings of vertigo, and just feeling disembodied, clammy hands, and panic, you know? And I think that, I guess looking back, I can say that I had been unconsciously suppressing or not connecting to my emotional, spiritual self without even realizing it. I was in this very stressful job, like I said, that was very much about meeting deadlines, showing up on time, being this person in the world, like 9 to 5, that was it. I was like everybody I knew at the time, self-medicating with caffeine, alcohol, other drugs, shopping, addiction, all of these things. But that was completely the norm in my world. And I say self-medicating because I realized that I was using all of those things as a way to push through any feelings of fatigue, any feelings of I need to be inwards now, any feelings of this is not making me happy, any feelings of this isn't fulfilling. And I think that, yeah, even in those few minutes with Andy of closing down the conscious monkey mind, that part of myself that was so craving some kind of recognition went, whoa, hi, yes, I'm here. And it was overwhelming.
Yeah. And so that, but something in you was able to push through that moment. That might be a moment that stops other people.
Yes.
From going any, I'm not doing that again. You know?
Yes. But, true.
So what was it in you that you think that was well, right? Were you ready right after that to go or?
I can't remember precisely the time scale.
Yeah.
But I think, yes, I was frightened. I did not want to go. I thought meditation, wow, I was like, this is supposed to be relaxing. That felt like the opposite.
Yeah.
But I was already under the mentorship of Shelley. I'd already identified that some things weren't working for me. I was suffering extreme anxiety in my job. This is the thing, it's kind of lost slightly to the mists of time, but it's all around the same time I had a consultation with a nutritionist. Well, actually, I interviewed a nutritionist for my job and brought up in conversation that I was having trouble sleeping. I was very anxious. And he suggested that I stop drinking coffee and cut sugar out of my diet. Within 2 weeks, my system had calmed. I was sleeping through the night again. I felt optimistic about the future, opposed to being completely overwhelmed all the time. So that had had a profound effect. I had already identified that I needed to find something outside of my job, my career, which had been so important to me and I'd really put everything into and had succeeded as a result. So I had approached Shelley about, you know, deepening my astrological studies just to have something on the side that would feed my soul for, you know, not that I was necessarily thinking it that way, but there was something that would bring more meaning to my days, I suppose. And so when Shelley then let me know that she was going to be, and it was probably a few months later that she was going to be teaching meditation and did I want to come and try it. I think I'd already spent enough time with her. And she's an astrologer, a very eminent astrologer in the UK. She's from California, but she's been working in the UK for 30 years or so now, I suppose. But her apartment where I would go for my sessions with her is kind of like the Harry Potter library. It's like every book under the sun about every different mystical tradition. And she had been telling me all about her different travels and studies, the gurus she'd worked with. And so I was very open to all of these subject areas with her as my guide. And so when she said that she was going to be studying, teaching meditation or kind of doing these intro sessions, I decided to try it again. But I was, when that first moment came, when she asked us to close our eyes, and I was nervous, of course, but I am also a natural born seeker. I think I'd already had this experience of, you know, changing my physical well-being through changing my diet. And I was deeply fascinated by what she was teaching me about outside of meditation. So I guess I was I have Sagittarius rising, so I am a seeker. I do. You
Well,
know,
you
I
had
am.
some, there was some infrastructure that in place, and you know, it's like you kind of were setting up. There was the coffee was gone. There was this relationship with this woman. There was, you know, there was a little bit of infrastructure so that when the stop happened, there maybe was some already some support in place to then
Exactly.
to keep going.
And I think, I honestly, when I first had the experience with Andy, my immediate thought was, well, there's something wrong with me because this works for everyone else. I didn't immediately go to, wow, meditation is dangerous. I immediately went to, okay, there's something unbalanced within me that I had that reaction. So this is helpful to many millions of people. So I was willing to try again because
There was some
already I
science,
think.
you were scientific about it on some level. There's a lot of people that are enjoying this, so
Exactly. And I think even in the few months probably that had passed, the conversation around meditation was becoming more mainstream. And I was curious.
And so how does it feel to be in this moment where, you know, this is all happening? I mean, does it feel, you know, the timing of your awakening with this happening culturally? I mean, how does that feel to be a part of that?
Very aligned. I mean, it's really interesting. I had worked as a features journalist, specializing in sort of like lifestyle trends for my entire career. And I've always been very attuned to the zeitgeist in that sort of a way, like able to spot this is going to be the next trend. However, creating, I launched the Numinous officially 2013, but I began working on it in 2012. None of which was planned, and it's been very interesting to see how my feeling and my impetus for creating the Numinous was that coming from this very kind of glossy, aspirational fashion magazine background with a deep interest in all things esoteric, it felt to me there was a gap for some kind of a publication that brought those two worlds together, in order to and perhaps remove some of the stigma that can exist around mystical subjects as being flaky or woo-woo or weird or out there. I saw these as tools with huge potential benefit to everybody on the planet and really felt there was space for a platform that presented them in a way that was like super palatable and accessible and intriguing and beautiful, beautiful to the kinds of audiences that I had been used to speaking to. And so it's been really interesting to see how during that time frame, 2011, 12 to now, these subjects have come much more into the mainstream in terms of, a young kind of like hip, fashion conscious millennial audience are very much like talking about all of these things now. And I do like to think that the Numinous has been part of broadening that conversation. But at the same time, I just feel like, my book, which was a spin-off really from the Numinous, it introduces many of these subjects through the lens of my own personal experiences, has been, I think that my personal experience and my personal journey has been a reflection of what's been happening on the macrocosm. And in a way, I sort of feel like my whole life I've been very attuned to that because, like I said, I've always written about social trends. It's just kind of, I just am energetically aligned in a way with what's going on in the macrocosm. And so, yeah, it's been really interesting. And like I said, it just feels very aligned. I feel much more, there's a chapter on doing your dharma, and I feel much more aligned with my purpose to be using that natural gift in this way to promote and kind of write and communicate about something which I feel can be and will be and is so beneficial to the populace, versus writing about fashion trends or, whatever it was I might have been writing about before.
And there's the chapter about yoga in your book. I was just struck with, you just lay out the eight limbs of yoga in a breakdown box, you know? And I was like, oh, you know, these are texts that, you know, many of us, it took like a lot of time to find this text and to get into the sutras and to understand, what's going on and who's Patanjali, And I love that it's just there. It's just, you just lay them out. Here's a himsa. Here's some samadhi, and then you can just keep going, or you can take that and go deeper in. And I think, how's the reception been to that?
Okay, so a couple of things. Yeah. Writing the chapters on yoga and meditation were almost the most difficult.
Yeah.
Because I kind of felt, well, there are thousands of years of knowledge here.
Yeah.
How do I make this accessible and relevant while also respecting these traditions? Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult to do that. Mm-hmm. But I knew I wanted to include these because these are two practices which, if anything, are the most accessible, have become the most accessible and mainstream, and are very much an entry point for a lot of people into this numinous world. So it was a huge challenge. And the response, by and large, has been, thank you for making this so relatable. Okay, yeah, I get it now. Okay, yeah, this does feel like it can be for me. Hmm. My concern, and there have actually been very, very few, if any, really, sort of responses that have been more along the lines of, this is disrespectful, or it's too shallow, or, my fear was that I would get that kind of a response. And there have maybe been like one or two reviews on Amazon that have kind of like said, this is just too shallow. But that's also fine. If it's too shallow for you, there are thousands of years of texts for you to dive into on a deeper way. I want to speak to people who are shopping in Walmart who may never believe that yoga could be a practice for them. Right. Otherwise, if it involves like years of study and, renouncing other things in your life that feel good or beneficial to you, that's going to turn off millions of people from ever even investigating yoga. So I did want to create, a low barrier to entry in terms of studying or understanding what these subjects are about.
Yeah. And it comes through. I mean, it does from my point of view, the respect for the value, the weight of the text does come through. But I was, I was struck by it, and I had spoke with this woman, Lama Siltram Alioni, earlier this year, and she's a Tibetan Lama, and in her 70s, and so I was talking to her about this explosion of, and she talked about it as all these different Dharma doors. Mm. She saw it as a very beautiful thing that that now there's a yoga studio in every little town in America, and that there's an entry point for everyone to go into. And then, like you said, if you want to know more, if you want to dive deeper into Patanjali's sutras, there's plenty of resources, and places and possibility for you to do that study.
I think I'll just add one more thing. I think that if anything, the danger is that people sort of use these practices as a badge to go, I do this and so now I am spiritual, and sort of see it as a lifestyle which you can buy just as you might buy, catwalk collections or whatever else, and focus on the material aspect. And what I also really wanted to do was kind of state and make it quite clear that this is not something you can just buy into. It's not a practice to be bought. This is why I said at the beginning, yoga for me is a tool, not an activity. It's not something I do with my girlfriends on a Saturday as a way to hang out. I do yoga in my pajamas at home because I want to feel a certain way, and I want to feel my body, and I want to allow my emotions to process physically. So I think I hope that comes through in the book also.
It definitely does. And I appreciate the playfulness too, and the image of you playing in the countryside in England too. It kind of, that whole playfulness comes through, and I do think that's definitely part of what has drawn me and kept me with my teacher Ram Dass. Is there's a lot of playfulness, there's a lot of imagination, there's a lot of freedom to explore, while maintaining this. This Shri, this kind of connection to the truth in a in a very deep and loving way. So how has that evolved for you now? So you've built this whole kind of world around your own awakening. And so how is that evolving for you now personally? Like, how are you feeling within that?
One very personal outcome has been that I no longer drink alcohol, and I've become a passionate advocate for what I call sober curiosity. Again, bringing that playfulness to what I think is actually a very deep and big subject when we're talking about our spiritual well-being. So that's been another big part of my journey, and I run Sober Curious events and talk a lot about how, you know, on my path, I realized that drinking alcohol was actually a substitute for numinous, a connection to the numinous, you know, and that a substitute that also came with many toxic and unwelcome side effects. So that's been a huge part of it. So, you know, in terms of my life now, I feel physically better than I ever have. I have slight colds today, so if you hear me snuffling, it's actually the first time I've been even close to sick for several years now. So physically I feel very well. One thing I think I do like to talk about is that, you know, the book is called The Now Age Guide to a High Vibe Life. And I think a lot of people enter in this onto this path when they're not feeling great and they want to feel better in some way. Happier, more relaxed, like more connected, all of these things. I don't feel happier. You know, I'm not kind of like walking around on cloud nine all the time. And I think a big part of my path and a big realization has been that, wow, to live a high vibe life or to feel this numinous connection doesn't mean feeling happy and upbeat all the time. If anything, it just means being much more connected to when I don't feel those ways and when I feel difficult emotions, and actually, you know, welcoming those emotions as part of my whole experience. And so, yeah, I'm healthier. I'm not happier. I am just more, but I'm more myself. I'm 100% myself, and myself is sometimes sad, anxious, overwhelmed, depressed, all of those things too, and that's okay. So that's been a big part of it, I guess. I feel very, very passionate and grateful and to have birthed many creations in the world that I feel really of value and importance, that I feel deeply connected to. So, yeah, where I am now, I'm hopefully going to be writing another book next year. I run, like I said, I've kind of translated a lot of, or I'm in the process of translating a lot of what I've created with the Numinous into an actual, this community, this online community, Moon Club, that launched a year ago. I run it with a colleague who's based in LA, and that's been a way to really have build an actual community around these practices, around this journey I've been on, to be able to pass back to others and inspire others to pursue this kind of a path for themselves. And that feels really, really great, actually, to be actually connecting with people in a much more real way with it all. The Numinous is going to be having a bit of a revamp and a tweak for next year.
That's exciting.
But yeah, it's all exciting. You know, my life is extremely rich.
Yeah.
Extremely richly textured. I remember once, hearing that phrase. I can't remember when I first heard it, but you know, the idea of living a richly textured life, and that's how life feels to me now.
And you feel like that's a direct result of your spiritual revolution.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there something that you would like to explore more, either in the different practices that you lay out in your book, or something that you are personally curious about diving deeper into in esoteric or traditional spiritual practice?
I would love to do a Vipassana meditation retreat. That's, the idea of it is petrifying to me. but at the same time, it feels not necessary, but yeah, I'm deeply intrigued as to what that experience would be like.
So Vipassana, the
yes.
idea of sitting for in silence
yes.
solely for 10 days or
yes.
more. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. In silence, but also with no writing materials or no form or method for self-expression whatsoever. So yeah, the idea being that you sit in meditation for between 8 and 10 hours a day, if not longer, and yeah, really get into the layers and layers and layers, the deep subconscious. You know, I'm yeah. very interested in that. I'm currently doing another astrological mentorship, so getting deeper into my astrological studies. And I haven't done much traveling from a sort of spiritual seeking perspective. And that's some, I've been very much kind of just grounded for the past 5-6 years while I've been building this, I suppose. And I would really like to get out into the world and experience some different teachings and different cultural kind of expressions of spirituality, I suppose, you know. I'd love to go to India. I haven't spent any time in India, and that's somewhere that's definitely on my list.
That sounds great.
Maybe even we'd love to, we're talking about doing some kind of a service trip with Moon Club. So that's something I would like to be in the not too distant future also.
That sounds like a wonderful next chapter of exploration
yeah.
to lead and then to share and to bring back.
Yeah.
And I do think that like, you know, this idea of spiritual leadership, if that's like a real thing, I'm not sure, because, you know, I think in a, like Ram Dass has said often, he used to refer to himself as Rent-a-Mouth, that he was just the one that was set there to tell everything that we already knew, and we would sit there and nod, basically him reflecting back to us what we knew inside.
I love that. Yes.
Yes.
I shy away from that idea of like teacher leader. It's like, no, I'm just an inspiration. Like I can inspire you through living my journey and my truths to do the same yourself. You know, that's what it is. Yeah.
Right. And tuned into each of our individual gifts, your gift of tapping into trends and being able to write and present about it in a way that draws people in. And that's, you know, for me, that this moment spiritually is really what that is asking and calling from each of us, is to find what that is and to give from that place.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the cycling in of all of our evolution spiritually and our consciousness expanding together.
Yeah, I love that. And that's really something, you know, our tagline for Moon Club is own your voice, find your story, serve the world. And I think that, yeah, the fact that we all have a unique and individual set of circumstances, evolutionary processes, karma, that inform our journey, means that we all have an equally important story to share, to inspire others. And if it means inspiring one person, if it means inspiring the people in our family, if it means inspiring the people in our school, whatever it is, then that's enough, you know. And it's really important for us all to step into that role.
Is there anything else that you think is out there with your trendsetting eye in the zeitgeist that might be percolating for us spiritually right now, or on the esoteric practices?
Ooh. I think there's still a long way for it to go in terms of this conversation becoming more mainstream, really. It's funny, from where I sit now in my Numiverse, and, you know, most of my connections, close connections now being people who are very much on this path and in this conversation, I can sometimes forget how far there is to go and I think, like I said, I think that many, many more expressions of these sort of spiritual practices coming through in ways that speak to different kinds of people with different backgrounds and different belief systems and different needs and all of that stuff, I think we'll really begin to see a big diversification in the way that spirituality is presented and spoken of.
What's the end game? With the end result being, you know, you know, what's the intention?
Well, I think, you know, so much of what my book has been about and what my journey has been about is the idea that, you know, so many of us live our lives from behind these deep, deep layers of conditioning and are not really expressing our true selves. And that that's the root of so much suffering for people. Mm-hmm. And so I think the end goal would be for everybody to feel free and empowered to just be themselves. Mm. That's it, really. It's that simple. Mm.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. That freedom. Freedom to be yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And the suffering, you know, I really did feel that, you know, like the suffering of living behind those layers of conditioning. Mm. And being able to come out of that and to step into something authentic really is that freedom. And like you said, like I'm happy on cloud nine every day, da 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 da. But I'm myself.
Exactly. And I'm accepted and I accept myself, you know, with all of my flaws and with all of my kind of uncertainties and with all of my quirks and with all my strangeness.
And you're able to give from that place in a way that is helpful to others.
Exactly. And I think not only are you able to give, but you no longer need to take. That's the other big thing. It's like there's no more this need to kind of like grasp onto, like I said, all the external things, be it coffee, alcohol, shopping, whatever it is. Mm. There's no need to use all of those external things to kind of paper over the cracks or pretend to be or look like I'm this person when actually this is just me, you know? No need to take from others as well. No need to kind of like knock others down if they're for making me feel less than anything, you know? If I'm confident that I'm enough as I am, I don't need to take away from others.
And that confidence comes from knowing the true self.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm still getting to know her.
Right. Yeah. Wonderful.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I suppose one of the most wonderful things about this whole journey has been the way that it's healed my relationship with my mom, and the way that it's almost also healed her relationship with her family history. It's had far reaching kind of tentacles, you know, when it comes to thinking about how I connected to my lineage, like the women in my lineage, all these sorts of things, which I wasn't anticipating at all when I embarked on this journey. But that's been one of the most important revelations, actually.
That your journey, your doing this work, your willingness to go in filters into your ancestry, filters into your whole life, that evolution.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yes, then when thinking about the end goal, if I think about that for every, you know, if everybody could have that experience, the kind of healing we would see individually, but collectively as well, I think will be immense.
Right. Is becoming. Yes.
Yes, is becoming. Exactly. Yeah. Is becoming.
Well, I've asked all of my guests if they would give a piece of advice specifically to women and girls on the spiritual path. So I offer that to you.
Yes. Well, my advice is don't assume that there's a one size fits all approach to your healing journey or what spirituality is for you. And really my advice would be to stop reading things like the Numinous that tell you this is how to, have a spiritual connection with your guides or whatever, and actually really just investigate and explore and do your own seeking and respond to and follow the practices, the teachings that really spark a sense of aliveness in you. And because your friends or your goddess group is doing it this way, don't assume that you have to do it that way also if it doesn't resonate with you.
And what does that spark of aliveness feel like? Can you help us understand what so we know maybe
Yeah,
what that
yeah.
is. Yeah.
So for me, it feels like an insatiable curiosity almost. And that's how it was with me in astrology when I was, thinking about, well, what's something I could research as a passion project just for myself on the side? I asked myself the question, well, what's the thing I could talk about and research just endlessly and never feel bored? And it was astrology. So that was my entryway into this whole journey, So it feels like curiosity and excitement, really.
Curiosity and excitement, and tuning into that and exploring and having that adventurous spirit to and that playful spirit.
Yes, exactly. What feels like fun, I think that one thing, and I'm glad you picked up on this, I feel like for many people looking at the or thinking about following a more spiritual path, it can seem very serious and weighty, which it is on many levels. But I've also had the most fun in my life pursuing these things, and had the best belly laughs and met some of the most brilliant and hilarious people. And I think, following what feels like fun, it doesn't have to feel serious or like a penance or like a, be infused with a sense of duty. There is a sense of duty and responsibility that kind of has emerged out of it for me, certainly, in terms of my duty and responsibility as a member of the human race to actually be contributing something useful or valuable. It should feel like fun.
And once you recognize that divinity, that sense of duty you're talking about, once you recognize the divinity in yourself, you see it in others, and it's natural that you want then to reflect that
Exactly.
back to them. So,
Exactly.
yeah. Well, this has been a delight, Ruby. It was so nice to meet you and to speak with you here. And I encourage everyone to please go to the Shakti Hour page at BeHereNowNetwork.com, where you'll find links to the Numinous and also to purchase Ruby's book. And thank you so much, Ruby. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your responsiveness and for having me on.